Here we are with Mardell.
Good morning, Maureen.
And Melissa.
Good morning.
Hello. So, how long has it been that you've been on the air? Have we figured that out yet?
You did. I think you were right that it was July when we started this.
That wasn't my guess. That was Janine.
Yep.
Mine was winter.
No, it was July when we started, actually.
Yeah.
And I think we've been going once a week, except for in the winter when the avalanche, we traded
right,
with the avalanche.
Off.
But other than that, we've been pretty consistent. So, yeah. So
yay,
here we are.
Here we are again, mid rainy summer day.
And you know, I've been a public radio supporter. Diz and I have both been a public radio supporters for many years. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time I've been on air and the fundraiser, which is pretty interesting considering I've been on the board and been even president of the board, but never been on for a fundraiser. So yesterday I was in the kitchen thinking, oh, goodness, I'm going to have to come up with one of those dorky, like, oh, you've got to support the radio station because, and relate it to the conversation, to the garden conversation. So I did. That you have to sustain a garden, of course, just like you have to sustain. So now every fundraiser, I hear these dorky kind of things of why you need to give rather than you just need to give.
I think you get the dork award this morning.
Anyway, all those gardeners should be able to relate. And there's so many gardeners. I said this last week. It's really exciting to drive around town and around our community and see how many areas are being developed into gardens. There's a lot of people that are putting a lot of energy into creating raised beds and making and getting domes and getting hoop houses and
greenhouses.
Yeah,
it's like the victory garden.
It is.
Does somebody want to extrapolate on that? The victory garden.
We will have a victory. We will have a victory when we reach $70,000.
Right.
I think when we went through the oil crisis a few years ago and people began to get a little bit nervous about transportation, the interest in food security
increased.
And I think that
Okay, but I'm going way back to like during the World War II, the victory gardens.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. Am I the only one that knows about this?
No,
that people
raised gardens.
Yeah,
they had gardens and they called them victory gardens.
They did
because they wanted to be able to feed themselves and their neighbors. And
well, and it was kind of
a patriotic thing to do.
It was a national campaign, and I have no doubt that the reason that Haynes has increased their gardening is also because we are part of a national. Michelle Obama kind of started this a little bit with.
Well, and going back even before Michelle Obama's work, which was great, back to Chez Panisse in Berkeley, which farm to garden and then gardens
so
in the schools.
It has been going on a lot, and it's taken a while for it to really take hold.
Right.
But it's not only Haynes, you're seeing gardens increase. It's if you go down south, it's also.
They're just popping up all
They are, them. And it's really exciting because the thing that I love about it is that it. The big thing for me is not only that you grow your own food, but that we feel like we have some control over what we eat.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to the grocery store, you don't. It's those corporations that are making the decisions for us about what we eat and all of that. So that's what I really love about having my own food source and making my own decisions and taking care of my own soil, that sort of thing.
And knowing what's in it.
Yeah,
there's so much research about the wellness that comes to us with gardening, with the exercise that's involved, with kind of the mind relaxing kind of thing, besides being able to control what you're eating and knowing what's in your food. Another thing I think is really true is that when I go to the work to grow something, I am going to eat it. I know.
That's right.
I know how much work went into
that. That's right.
And even if I don't feel like having spinach salad, I'm going to have spinach salad because there it is.
Yeah.
And I grew those plants from seeds. And
Yeah. And the nice thing is that things will stay longer in your refrigerator when they come out of your garden. Yeah. That's another thing is that they're fresher.
Right.
So you're getting much more nutrients because you can tell by how long they stay alive, or maybe not alive, but
fresh
yeah. in your refrigerator.
Yeah.
So.
And they'll stay fresh on the plants for a long time.
And they do.
Too.
Yeah, that's right. Although my spinach, I've been pushing it. I've got a bunch of spinach patches and I've been pushing it because I got company coming and I don't want to cut it. But spinach just does not wait,
right.
Especially if you get a little bit of sun. They go to seed, and
yeah.
I still use them, but they aren't as nice when they've gone to seed.
I have 4 crops of spinach going currently right
mm-hmm.
now.
And yeah,
the first batch I planted in a dryer barrel, and I started eating that spinach about, maybe 6 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and it's starting to bolt.
mm-hmm.
Some of it that I started the same day, I did not put in a spinach barrel, put it in a raised bed, and it's, now really great. And then mm-hmm. I've got 2 other generations coming along. So, it's a nice progression.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to have big muscles. You're going to look just like Popeye.
Popeye.
I can see it.
So
did you
know? Gives me the energy to recycle, that's
uh-huh.
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, with the dryer things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So did you know if every Alaskan spent $5 a week on Alaska-grown food, it would have a $188 million impact?
Wow.
Is
yeah.
that amazing
yeah.
or what?
Wow. Yeah.
Alaska grown.
And that's another thing that I find really exciting is that we have more people putting out for the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A few years ago, you'd go to the farmer's market and there was really nothing to buy as far as produce. And
right,
that's
right.
not the case anymore. And then this salt soil. Yeah, yeah. Is very exciting because that mm-hmm. makes it easier for the growers as mm-hmm. well as the buyers. Mm-hmm. And so it is becoming a little bit easier and more possible for people to buy Alaska-grown stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, cool.
So yeah. So we do have some questions.
Yay, I love questions.
We yeah. do, yeah. Here's from one listener. I have 2 tomato plants that are doing well. One is an indeterminate sweet million, and Beaver Lodge is a determinate. So, Mardell, as you answer the question, you
I
might
will.
Want to clarify indeterminate
I will do
from
that.
Determinate.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This person is fairly new to gardening. Has always been told and also read that suckers that form in the armpits between the main stem and the branches have to be removed or they'll drain the energy from the plant. But I find that there are a lot more flowers forming on the suckers than on the main part of the plant. Should I be cutting off the suckers?
All right. First of all, let's define what determinate and indeterminate plants are. Determinate plants are a tomato plant that sets all of its fruit and flowers pretty much at the same time. It's not exactly at the same time. I only grow determinate plants, and I find in our climate, I have tomatoes going well into past when they freeze. So I choose to grow only determinate because determinate do not get so tall, and they stop growing when they start doing their set of fruit and flowers. Indeterminate plants are the ones that will keep on growing. Tomatoes are actually, indeterminate plants are a perennial plant. And if you ever go to Chena Ridge Hot Springs up in Fairbanks, I think they still have this going on. You will see a phenomenal thing. They have tomato plants that are when I was there, they were 3-4 years old, still producing pounds and pounds of tomatoes.
Wow.
And what they do is they take their stems and run them on the bottom. So these stems were like 90 feet long. And this is what you need to do to your tomato plant, too, is pull off those bottom leaves. They get yellow. That's what a tomato plant does, is the bottom leaves will get yellow and not be functional. So get those off. Well, what Chena Ridge Hot Springs did is that they just kept pulling those off, and they would run these stems. They had a conveyor belt. I mean, they had this all rigged up. And so only the top of the plant, and there were 100 plants, tops of the plants were producing. So that's what indeterminates are. You can do that with indeterminates, not with determinants. Determinants quit producing tomatoes.
Okay. So the last time I was on, I was talking about a friend who was bringing tomatoes from last year's plant
mm-hmm.
to a party. And so she must have an indeterminate
yes,
plant.
Yes.
So you can just lay one of those long mm-hmm. stems down pin it down to some soil, it will root. And
no, it doesn't root. No, you're growing off. Well, it may root. I shouldn't say it like that. But that's what you're focusing on. The top of the plant will continue to produce your flowers and whatnot. So that's an indeterminate plant. And if you want to grow them just normally and get your fruit and flowers as quickly as you can, you do need to prune. And what that means is pulling out those suckers in between the stem and the branch that goes out.
In the V shape.
Mm-hmm. If you look in there, you'll see little ones. And the sooner you do it, the better it is. Because if you let them go, they will produce flowers, just like this person is saying. They've got flowers and fruits on them. But if you look at them, you will get a sucker off of that as well. And so prune that off, because it's not really that the plant loses energy by having these. But what happens is that the plant is putting energy into creating these new flowers and tomatoes. So it's going to take you longer to get your tomatoes. And in our season, that makes a difference.
Right,
we can't
right.
wait until September or August to get tomatoes, because we're not going to get many.
We're not down south anymore.
We're not down south.
Yeah, because I never suckered when I was down south.
Right. And so you don't have to sucker.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But you're going to get faster and probably overall better production on indeterminates. So the other thing that it does, and a good reason for pruning, is because you want to get sunlight to tomato leaves so that they can photosynthesize. And if you are like me, you let your tomatoes get pretty crowded, and it not only inhibits sunlight getting into their leaves, but it also creates a lovely place for molds, disease. Most of us don't grow our tomatoes out in the earth, on the ground, so we don't have as much problem with splash and rain, but it still can lead to disease and fungus and whatnot. My recommendation is don't do what I do, in that I will go, oh my goodness, I have mold in my tomatoes. I better prune them out. It's better to do it a little more proactive. And give those tomatoes some light and air, cutting off where they're touching, cutting off between there. Not your flower stems, not where they're flowering, but the leaves of the tomato, as long as there's plenty of leaves, your tomato's not going to suffer if you cut out some of that and give it some air.
Okay, so in summary, then, you do prune on both determinate and indeterminate, on one?
You need to prune on indeterminates
on
more.
Indeterminate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Determinants you need to prune if they are close together. So I don't prune the suckers out of mine, but I do prune when they're too close together so that they have good air ventilation. So, yes, the answer is you do need to prune both. But the indeterminates are the ones that you really probably should be pruning.
Okay. And for new gardeners, when you are selecting your varieties in the spring, you can see the catalog or the seed packet will tell you whether they're determinate or indeterminate. Mm-hmm. And in the areas that grow tomatoes commercially, the determinants are handy if they're going to pick them all at once for a cannery or something like that.
And I've had many people say, oh, I don't want my tomatoes to all come in at one time. But I'd be really interested. This is something that I'd love to have our email be a little bit more interactive. So if you have an opinion on this, I would love to hear it. But my experience is that with my determinant plants, they keep producing until it's way too cold, I mean, into September, October. And so I see no benefit or advantage to having indeterminate plants here, unless there's one that you particularly love. I mean, there's some people who have a particular variety that they really want.
Like. And so,
and the Sweet Million is a really sweet, wonderful variety if you are going to grow an indeterminate. So.
Okay. We do have that Facebook page, too.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And that's more interactive.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so if you do have an opinion on that, on this tomato indeterminate, it'd be interesting to hear it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I pinch back all the new growth starting about the 1st of August.
Oh, that's another good point.
Yeah, I don't let the plant put on any new vegetative growth after that, and then have it focus all of its energies on the existing tomatoes.
And sometimes that's a hard thing to do because the tops of my plants are flowering, and it's hard to cut off flowers. But there's absolutely no sense to leave them on in the end of August, September, they're not going to do anything except take energy from the plant to form new flowers and new fruits. So yeah, you really should top your plants.
It's all so sad.
Yeah. I know. That's the recognition at the 1st of August that summer will sadly end. So, yeah.
And I usually do mine later in August, and I think that's some of the climatic difference between town and out the road. So I do mine in late August when I top mine.
Yeah, so. Because you're farther from the water, mm-hmm. so you get more extremes of temperature. Yeah.
So I wanted to answer another question. We're going to run out of time. Even though we have more time today, we're still going to run out of time. These garden conversations just never have enough time. I wanted to talk about cutworms a little bit because people have been talking about cutworms more. When I first moved here, nobody really had issues with cutworms.
What do they look like?
They are a fat, juicy caterpillar that what they do is they go around on the soil, on the level of the soil, and they will just eat off your plant. They'll mow it down. And you can come out in the morning and have a whole row of plants mowed down, just boom, 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 boom.
What color are they and how big are they?
Well, I think you can't say that they are one color because there's several different varieties of them. But what they are is they're nocturnal. And it's those dark brown, well, maybe not dark brown, brown splotchy moths that you see flying around at night that are also nocturnal. That's the mature.
The outcome of it.
The mature. Okay. And the immature is these juicy fat caterpillars that are on your soil, and they are also nocturnal. And somebody, I wish I could give credit to this person that I just had a conversation with a couple weeks ago, said that something that works, that makes perfect sense to me, is to stick a couple finishing nails beside your stem of your plants, because that inhibits that caterpillar from going and eating around the stem.
Oh, makes sense.
Collars work too. You can take cardboard or something like that and put a collar around, but that seems way more difficult to get a collar around a stem than just to stick a couple finishing nails in there. Make sure it's right next to the stem so that the caterpillar can't get between the nail and the stem.
Well, it's like copper with slugs. There may be some kind of a metallic chemical reaction.
That was not the impression I got.
You think it's just
a physical
situation.
A physical thing that just because you can do the same thing with collars. So, one other quick thing I wanted to say was I actually had a personal conversation with Dick Flagel. Everybody's been talking about Dick Flagel's recipes for slug stuff. And so I actually called Dick and I said, so what's the scoop with this? It's one of the benefits of this program. I get to learn and talk to other gardeners. And he does use the slug preventative. He actually sprays ammonia water on his plants, and he believes it works as a preventative thing rather than, I wouldn't say preventative, but actually just he does it when he sees slugs in general. He sprays his plants. He doesn't always have to see a slug and spray that particular slug. So he uses a solution of 1 to 1.5 cups pure ammonia to a gallon of water. And it does not harm the plant at that concentration, although I did some research on that, and they say don't spray that stuff on little baby plants because it can harm young plants. Mm-hmm. And ammonium is a fertilizer. I don't think that it is actually, from my research, I don't really think it's acting as a fertilizer because it's in a different form when you spray it on the plant. But it doesn't harm them, that is for sure.
This is the ammonia you get in the grocery store.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and our soil's very acid here, not like yours.
Well, most of it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mardell's is basic, but most of it is acidic. And so the ammonia would tend to neutralize the acidity.
Okay. Just do it in a well-ventilated area.
Yeah.
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 Like
that's
outside.
Right. So, listeners, if you want this garden conversation to continue, please support us, and not support us individually, but please support Cage and us, because sometimes I wonder whether we really should keep it going. But if you want it to keep going, please donate. Up your donation. And do it in the name of garden conversation. And
there you go.
That'll tell us that you really do want to continue hearing it.
All right.
And that'll give us good incentive.
And if you haven't donated yet, you know you're going to, so yeah, just do it. You don't have to feel bad.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you are tuned to your community radio station, KHNS 102.3, 91.9 on your FM radio dial, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan. Thank you so much, Mardell and Melissa, for all you do for our communities, mm-hmm. and particularly for our radio station coming on. And thank you so much.